Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
1 o'clock hour, Cofield here at the Final Four, Westwood One Radio Row. Adam Hill is alongside, talking to a bunch of the coaches. We'll have a conversation coming up with former UNLV coach Marvin Menzies, making his way pretty well in Kansas City with the Ruse. Coach Joe Esposito, one of our college basketball insiders for a couple of years, on the staff as well. So they'll be up in less than 5 minutes. DeMond is back at the Finley Toyota Studios. All right, DeMond, we discussed briefly earlier in the show one of the big news items concerning Vegas, and that is the A's temporary home. They have settled on Sacramento. So while we wait, because we knew there was going to be a big gap, 2028 is when the stadium's supposed to be done. We'll see. They have chosen a home for 2025 to 27. Sacramento. DeMond, your reaction.
How long can Major League Baseball allow this to happen?
What does that mean?
Whoa.
What's this?
The A's being ran by John Fisher, where this move to Sacramento, it's happening because he's just too cheap. He's just too cheap to pay for it.
The Coliseum deal. So Oakland knew what it was doing. We talked about this yesterday with Justin Watkins. The A's pay $1.25 million a year to be at the Coliseum. The Oakland's like, you can pay $97 million over the next 5 years, so $20 million a year, basically, 19, whatever it is. That was going to be a no from the get-go. And then they also layered it with, and you're going to be required to sell your 50% ownership of the Coliseum.
Yeah.
It was going to be double no. I think it's more important. It's not even a money thing. Well, it is. Well, it is, because they have to stay in the area to keep a lot of that TV deal. So with Bay Area NBC, they get, 67 million dollars a year that will be renegotiated down. I don't know what the number is, but I know the term, and I always love this term. They're going to take a haircut on that one, right? So say it's 45 million. So he wants that $45 million. And then the other thing, they are sensitive. Even though they seem like evil overlords, you get the snot kicked out of you every day, you just want to get away from the people who you feel are abusing you. Down the road in Sacramento, check that. I guess technically up the road in Sacramento. I screw that up. They're not going to hear it as much.
Yeah. But they're going to hear it as much, because it is going to be still Oakland fans that are angry and upset. It's still the same media market, and you're taking this team to Sacramento, a place that thinks they should have a team, that thinks they deserve a team, that thinks they should be a major league market. And you're like, hey, we'll be here for a couple of years for you. Isn't that good? No, it's not.
I mean, they're going to understand the relationship from the get-go. They're there for 3 years. I would hope, and I actually not going to overstate how important we are in media or sports talk radio. We've tried to be very real about what the A's are. At least one of the guys who does sports talk radio in Sacramento knows. We had him on, Carmichael Dave, and he said he's very uncomfortable with the team potentially being there. This was like a month ago. And he said, we've already gone through this with the Kings and all the moving stuff and the back and forth and the threats. So I think those fans are so battle scarred, they're not going to get fooled. I guess they could, because then Ranadive, the owner of the Kings, is, we want to buy the team. It's a weird situation.
Well, let's stop being negative. And DeMond, I tell you, don't be negative. Yes. Be positive.
Yes.
Say, great job. Sacramento deserves this team. They've earned
That's
this opportunity. We applaud.
We're not ready. Sacramento
is. We applaud
is.
Sacramento for stepping up. Ready. We love you, Sacramento, and we support your bid to become a major league city. We encourage you to do everything you can to not make this temporary, to show up so strong, so passionately, and so positively for the A's that relationship lasts forever. I think we should encourage them.
We
love them.
To the Sutter. And record-breaking attendance every game. Let's see it.
Let's see people clamoring to, like, knocking the doors down to get it. They're going to put some temporary seating in the outfield grass. Fill that. And then stand around the stadium, watch through the outside, and give them your money. Buy concessions, buy souvenirs, buy team merchandise. Support the heck out of this team. Make it so they'd never leave.
The great part about escaping the torture of some of the fans who are really angry in Oakland, they're going to go to Sacramento. They will willingly spend their money or at least stay outside. That's actually, in a lot of ways, it's great for Sacramento. Like, yeah, let's have 1,000 A's fans all pissed off come in and drink and eat in the city. And, yeah, if you, we're not going to let you anywhere near the stadium, but you can protest down the road and raise a ruckus.
I would open city restaurants and bars in the parking lot and encourage it. But they're not going to be used. It's going to be such a great fan experience that everybody's going to go inside and just have a great time.
You're always so positive. It's hard to keep up with you.
It's true.
Over the top. Right, yep. DeMond? We're ready to argue and kvetch and scream and complain, and then Adam, Mr. Positive, comes in.
I haven't seen it anywhere, but do we know what the capacity for this new ballpark is?
It's going to be 14, I think.
Yeah, I think like 14.5, so a little bigger than LV ballpark.
Sell 22,000 tickets every day to that 14.5.
What does that mean?
Jam them in.
Sell out every day.
Standing room only.
Oversell, yeah. And if somebody gets up from their seat, you take their seat.
Do we think they're going to average 5? If we were to be pessimistic, Adam, I know we don't want to do this.
Are they going to average 5 at the minor league park?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Sacktown will eat this freak. They'll eat it up.
Oh, they're going to eat it up. Oh, well, Adam, maybe Adam's right about this then.
Yeah.
Because if I lived in Sacramento, I'd say, why do I want to go see the A's?
You know, like usually when you go to weddings, you're hoping that they get divorced like in the first 2 years.
What? Who's thinking that?
Everyone, right?
Yeah. We all on this show, we root against marriages.
I think this is a marriage that – this is the first time I've seen a marriage. I'm like, yes, I want this to last.
You're really laying it on thick. I love this.
It's a perfect match.
It is. Sacramento's a great town, beautiful.
Oakland wants a home.
Awesome fans.
Sacramento wants a team. What could be better? I love it.
I did actually like Sacramento when I would visit. The only times I went there were for UFC fights. It was cool.
Oh, players are going to love it.
Here we go.
It's fantastic.
Here we go. Meanwhile, the rest of the country is – California's mocked on Sacramento as an armpit, one of the many armpits in the middle
there's
of the state.
There's a bar with a giant tank above the bar where there's mermaids in there.
Really?
Yeah, there's like an indoor basement mini golf course right next to Golden 1 Center.
There's
a speakeasy.
How soon would it take for the A's to try to steal the Like the Beam?
Oh, I hope – they earned it. They should do it.
Really ingratiate themselves to the community.
There's new kings of Sacramento, and they're the Oakland A's.
Man, I've never seen you so positive on, we'll call it, Northern California Central. Because the further you go south, my God, Adam has been at war with these people for years.
Well, they're awful people, but Sacramento people
are
great. But you know what? People of Bakersfield, I encourage you also. Make the drive. See what real life is like outside of your awful town.
I was listening to – I thought of you for a second in your war with Bakersfield that went on for years to the point where the local paper hated your guts.
They wrote a column asking me never to come back.
Yep. I was thinking of you the other day because Bakersfield actually is kind of a big cowboy town.
Yeah.
And someone was mentioning – it was on the Country Channel on SiriusXM, and they were mentioning Buck Owen and his place there. He's deceased, but
okay.
I was like, yeah, that's a good point. That is a redeeming feature. They have some good country singers of the past.
Is cowboy town a euphemism for a place where parents sell meth to their kids?
How can we flip? Why are we flipping?
You
can't lie on this one.
It's Bakersfield.
You can't lie on this one.
No, Sacramento's great. Bakersfield can stay in Bakersfield.
Have you been back since the paper wrote that article about you?
I drove through.
You did?
Yeah, I didn't stop.
Afraid or just nothing to do?
Yeah, why would I stop? I do want to go visit that security guard that I wrote about again. So they're guarding the parking lot. They thought it was Buckingham Palace.
Yes. I forgot about that. That was the angle that got things started.
The dumbest thing I've ever seen.
DeMond, of all the stations that you hope to leave Lotus for, God, I can't remember the name of the station because they're pretty big. I feel like it's like the Sports Hog. Something with a pig theme. Little Rock or Fayetteville interest you?
Steve, Arkansas? I'm going to surprise you here. Yes, it would interest me because all I would have to do is take a trip over the bridge and I'd be right there in Memphis.
I know.
It's not right over the bridge.
Well, I bet he's right. Like, what is it? Is it Fort Smith that's right over the bridge?
No.
On the 40?
It's West Little Rock. Fort Smith is still a little bit further.
Okay.
Yeah, to get to West Little Rock, you're basically You know, you're basically
West Memphis,
and then you're right
Arkansas.
There. West Memphis, and then you're basically in Memphis, so you're good. So I would be able to make that sacrifice.
Okay. I feel like that would be a living hell.
Yeah, it'd be awful.
And I was laughing the last couple of days as Arkansas fans were puffing out their chest and saying, no way would Eric Musselman leave for a crappy program like USC. Like, who do you people think you are?
Did you see how happy he was on the plane going to USC? He just posted the photo.
We got out!
I've never seen somebody
so
escaped!
Happy. How happy do you think his wife is?
Oh.
Is it Danielle Sargent?
Danielle is thrilled.
In Little Rock and Fayetteville. Ugh. Now they get to go to L.A.
Look, Little Rock is a decent...
Program's crap! L.A.'s crap!
Little Rock isn't terrible. Little Rock's a decent little town. The rest of the state is atrocious.
Yes. Oh, I forgot you have ties to Arkansas as well.
Yeah.
You had some family members who were working in the political realm.
Yeah. Yeah, went to a wedding at the governor's mansion.
This is one of the great outcomes of a coaching search. Because an area that thinks way too much of itself just got punched in the grill.
Well, also,
Adam, you know Bill Clinton. Is that what I'm hearing?
No comment. Have I been at a function?
We've talked about it on the
air.
Have I been
at a function with him? Maybe.
Of course.
So, it's also great, the next chapter of this, of where do they go? Because I think I know who the leading candidate is at Arkansas. And the problematic cast-off regime that they're going to have in the athletic department is going to be fantastic.
The problematic cast-off.
Who's their football coach?
At which school?
Arkansas.
Oh, okay. You're going way deep. I know what you're talking about. Are you saying Bobby Petrino is going to be put in a compromising position?
No, I'm saying...
Oh, I thought it was like, hey, there's some good-looking young women who are going to be working in that athletic department.
No, no, no.
You know, he's going to be compromised.
No, I'm saying if they bring in Chris Beard, if now your top two coaches on campus are, you know, Chris Beard, it's going to be rough.
Okay. This is in no way tied to Barry Odom.
No.
Down the road. Okay.
No.
We buried the lead, by the way. USC hired Eric Musselman.
Oh, yeah.
So he's back in the West, a former Nevada Reno head coach. He's a California guy. The USC job is a good job. He will do – I think they have resources. They have a smaller building. If you needed to pump up excitement and get – and kill it in the transfer portal, they nailed it. And he's a lot more mature than he used to be, which I think going back is probably why he didn't get the UCLA job, right? Weren't there concerns?
Yeah, I think so.
So he's now shown himself to, you know, rip your shirt off, but other stuff, calm down. And now he's in L.A., yeah, making millions.
And thrilled to be.
Does this end the Bronny story?
What, do you think he's just going to stay?
Yep. What do you think, Devon? I mean, who better than Eric Musselman to go and pitch the kid?
I think he stays. I do believe that him entering the portal, I think that's what all kids have to do once your coach leaves the school. Well, hey, I'm not. If the new guy isn't someone I like, I might be on the move. But I think he's going to stay now.
Well, speaking of guys who could do it with the spoken word and was a pretty good recruiter, and now he's at Kansas City with the Ruse, and Coach Joe is there, Joe Esposito, our good friend. Marvin Menzies sat down with us a little while ago. Marvelous Marvin Menzies, and started off the convo just gauging his mood.
I am marvelous.
That was a hard answer right there.
I had to make it a little dramatic with the delivery, but yeah. No, life's great. Life's great, Steve. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, good
you
to
guys,
see you.
You guys look like you're enjoying yourself.
Somehow we're still doing this. Yeah. Huh? Joe came in. There was like a glow. There was a gleam about him. He's like, oh, yeah. Look at the season we had. So talk about the season you guys just had.
Well, let me tell you, this guy... People, he's a much, much better coach than he is a radio guy. Just
that's
know.
Terrible, man. That's terrible. He's
not bad on the rail, but, you know, it is an interesting story before I tell you about the season. So Joe and I have been friends for, I don't know, 35, 40 years, whatever it is. So we always talked about working together. And we did for that year at UNLV when he came over and kind of ran the office for me. But he wasn't on the floor. So... You know, it was cool because we could do dinners with Mary and Tammy and have a good time out there, go to shows, all that good stuff. But when I got him this last couple of years we worked together, I'm telling you, man, there might not be a better maybe just a few better offensive minds in the country. Like, I've worked with some high-level dudes, as you know, and Joe navigates our roster and the personnel better than most. And so I'm going to say this one time. He'll never hear me say it again. Don't give him a recording of this. We argue more than any other head coach and associate head coach in the country, but in a loving way. But no, it's been fantastic, and we wouldn't have had the success we've had. I get Coach of the Year, but he says, "Hey, congrats, you get Coach of the Year." I said, "No, we got Coach of the Year. This was a joint venture. A family, you know, village got this done, and we got on a roll there late, and ended up taking a second seed in conference. I think we were picked. What were we picked? Seventh, eighth,
eighth,
eighth in conference. Yeah. So I mean, those are hard to pick now. Anyway, it's like
all new teams,
musical chairs, you know. So, but anyway, it works out good if you end up higher than you were picked. Yeah. So
it was funny with Danny Sprinkle at Utah State. We had him at Mountain West Conference Media Day, and I apologized to him later in the season. We talked to him. I'm like, "I'm sorry. I saw your roster with a whole new roster. I'm like, we didn't give you any respect.
Right.
We were like, we just did it to be nice to do the interview. And then to your point, like, I don't know. There's so many new guys on the team, and then now he's on to Washington.
No, there's no question. You know, Sprink is one of my guys, and he's putting a great staff together over there. And you know, when he took the job, he brought over those kids from Montana State. And I told a few guys, I think we were talking, we're over at a Buffalo Wild Wings or something, and we got in this deep conversation about the Mountain West. And I said, don't sleep on Sprink squad, man. Utah State's going to be good. And they're like, "Yeah, those guys are in the Big Sky." I go, "No, they dominated the Big Sky. They went to the NCAA tournament, and they're all playing together again, especially that guard. I forget his name.
Darius Brown. A couple times I watched him, I'm like, he looks like Daryl Griffith. Like, he's that old. But, I mean, he played like a 25-year-old, man. He was really good.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of those guys there. We've been playing against 25-year-olds ever since. New Mexico State, I think we had who was in our conference? We had Utah State, who had the guys that come back from the missions. You know, yeah. And we played a bunch of guys that had older guys, so it's not new. They just people are figuring out that you know, a mission is probably not a bad thing to do if you're in college basketball.
Start asking some of your players to become Mormon. That'd be smart. That'd be a good move.
Hey, they can be sheiks. I could care what they are. Take a year, brother, and just go lift weights and work on your skill set. And you can preach to a few people while you're out there, too. But come back and see me next year.
How are you adapting to all the movement, all the things in college basketball that are new? Because when these rules started opening up more, you were one of the guys I thought of, like, you are going to love this. You're going to embrace this. I mean, it does make it more difficult. You got to re-recruit guys every year and all that.
Right.
But I have to imagine you enjoy every year being able to go out and just find guys.
You know what? It's interesting. That's a great question, too, because everybody complains about the new dynamic, the new landscape. And they say, "Oh, well, this and that." Well, okay, picture yourself on the other side. What if you were a parent and your son can make $200,000 or $300,000, or I've heard a kid recently got $750,000, you know? So, you gotta walk in other people's shoes, and you gotta say, okay, well, how much do they actually need it? And, you know, it's a very complex new landscape, but it is what it is, right? So I'm embracing it. Joe and I are figuring out our model, you know, our blueprint has got to be different because of where we are. So I'm not going to give everybody our secret, but because it's working for us. So we'll keep it close to the vest. So, I remember Rick Majerus once, the guy rested. So we were talking once, and his assistant coaches, boy, I don't know if you guys remember, but Rick's assistant coaches didn't interact. They were like the most non-social dudes on the road. And I was, you know, I was just kind of curious, and Rick, and they all said, "Well, yeah, Rick doesn't let us do that. Like, we're not into the gossip. They don't want to know that." Now you can't survive unless you know who's leaving where, and you got to be in the know now. The gossip and the social is a necessary skill set as an assistant coach now.
When that doesn't happen anywhere more than it happens here, by the way, at the Final Four. It's wild to watch it. It's crazy, but it's also fun, right? Is it as fun for you guys? Like, just for us to witness it, it's amazing. But I think for you guys, it's got to be pretty cool just to be around all these coaches talking and socializing and all that too.
It's a when you've had a good season, it's a chance to come and exhale. I have laughed more than I can ever laugh. I've shed more tears at Final Fours with Joe and Mary than we have any other time in my life. I'm telling you, man, we have the best time. Well, we usually are coming off winning seasons too. So we had a few teary Final Fours when I was at UNLV, but outside of that, it was pretty good.
I just texted him this morning. I said, Marv, let's pretend when we're out there that we don't work together, that we're back to where we used to be. So we can just have fun. And we just got a commitment from a guy. So it's like a good feeling. Like, you know, we're just about done. We feel good. And let's forget about that we work together and try to enjoy Phoenix.
I don't know how long that's going to last. Yeah, no. We'll be back in the concierge room banging on our computers in a little bit.
Marvin Menzies, Joe Esposito with us. Last 2 minutes, I just wanted to mention two guys from UNLV that were your guys. We were talking about Shaq Nabele working with Circa Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's cool.
My guy Bill Cramsey hired him for me.
All right.
I don't want anybody to get credit that they got him the job. I got him the job, Bill. let's put any all those rumors to rest.
You know, the other guy I want to mention, it was weird. They did a 25th all-time Mountain West Conference team. And for UNLV, they only had a couple of players. But they put Anthony Bennett on it. Nothing against Anthony because he had a good year.
He did.
But I was like, Bryce Hamilton recently.
Yeah, I would.
One of the great stories.
I would have leaned on Bryce myself. I saw that actually, and I was like, "Yeah." And Ant's a great kid too, you know. And was he the first one?
Yeah.
So you know that chapter is that chapter, but you know.
Bryce was a bridge to get where they are now. If Bryce doesn't stay committed to multiple coaches, I mean, there could have been some real problems.
Yeah, no. We had deep talks when I left, and I said, I told him to stay. I said, stay. I said, don't follow me. Follow the best situation for you. And at that time, it was with TJ, who's a great dude. And then now, you know, Kevin gets it, and who's another great guy, part of my family there with Lon. So I'm a rebel. You know, once a rebel, always a rebel. Still pulling for him and optimistic for the future, especially hiring Eric. You know, Eric Harper, I think, is a great athletic director. So looking forward to more success for those guys.
Well, we're glad you're kicking booty in the Midwest. Keep it going, and thanks for sitting down with us.
No, my pleasure. Good to see you guys.
Thanks, man.
This traffic report brought to you by Jaguar Land Rover Las Vegas, off the 215 east of Rainbow.
Accident on the Northern Beltway, that's eastbound before Jones. Also 15 northbound, that's on the off-ramp to Sahara Avenue. Still slowing from that earlier 195 southbound after Casino Center. And an accident, airport connector northbound after Flamingo.
This traffic report brought to you by Jaguar Land Rover Las Vegas, JLRLV.com. Jaguar Land Rover Las Vegas would like to invite you to own a luxury vehicle without the luxury expense. Our certified pre-owned Jaguars and Land Rovers have warranties available up to 100,000 miles. Find out more today at JLRLV.com.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Radio Row in Phoenix with the Final Four. Cofield, Adam Hill. DeMond's back in the Finley Toyota Studios. We are everywhere. Circa Las Vegas is where Greg Salerno is hanging out at Victory Burger right there at Circa Sports. Greg, we've got to run something kind of non-sportsy, but it is sportsy by you. DeMond, you know, Candy was all worked up about this the other day. DeMond, what do we got with a sequel?
A Happy Gilmore sequel, Steve, and I don't think anyone wants this. I don't know who asked for it, but I'll throw it out to you, Greg. Would you be interested in this? Are you an Adam Sandler fan?
You know, that's interesting you bring this up because, like, about a week ago, I was partaking in some legal Vegas recreation right before watching a movie. And I was in a state of mind where I probably would have laughed at anything. And I put on Happy Gilmore, which as a kid, I used to like just die laughing, you know, crying on the floor.
Uh-oh.
I didn't laugh one time. Like I could not believe how bad the movie was. Like it did not hold up at all. Like I couldn't believe it. And the last movie I saw him in was this, movie where he was on Netflix as like a Native American ninja or something. It was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life, and I mean he should have a warrant out for his arrest for making the movie. It was so bad. So like I don't know, man. His record to me not so good right now.
Well, that's the problem. You weren't in the right state of mind. It's a very highbrow movie. You need to really be thinking.
Maybe that's it. You're probably right. Yeah. I did kind of inhale a bonsai tree before I watched the movie. So,
DeMond, it was your question.
No, I just think that this sucks because he was Adam Sandler went on the Dan Patrick show when he was talking about this, and we know that Dan Patrick, you know, he's always got a cameo in Adam Sandler's films as well. But he mentioned something where it was a bit sad, but he was, oh, we would want Drew Carey to do it to honor Bob. And then, yeah, boy, also we don't have Carl Weathers on. We don't have Carl Weathers with us anymore.
He was dead in the movie anyway.
That's true.
Okay.
Like, why would he come back? He died in the movie.
Well, they did do like that Star Wars scene, though, you know, where he was kind of like the Obi-Wan Kenobi or whatever. I don't know. I guess they could have done that again or something. But.
I feel like maybe Adam Sandler just isn't a comedic actor anymore because Hustle was incredible. Like, it's just, he's just a serious actor now.
That's a good point, Uncut Gems. That A24 movie he made was great, too. Whatever, I forgot the name of
it. Uncut Gems was great, except for, God, the stupid sports betting scenes that were just not realistic, really. It made me mad. That's about it.
Can I chime in with
at the tip?
Can I chime in with Eight Crazy Nights was actually sort of sad? I cried a lot. He's crossed over. Maybe he shouldn't be doing comedies anymore. And I just saw the heckler in the movie passed away like 2 days ago. Something like Joe Flaherty or something?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Tell yeah, that guy was actually really funny when he was young. He was like one of those, improv guys.
So what you're saying, it's curse if you work on the movie with Adam Sandler? Like, all these people die?
I'm feeling like it.
Okay. Makes sense. That adds up.
Last time I saw Rob Schneider, he didn't look too good either, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, his mind is wandering a little bit, saying some crazy things.
He really is.
Greg, we appreciate it. I know you're going to be over Man on the Set at TI tomorrow, so thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Circa Las Vegas, Friday. That's tomorrow. Friday. Official VGK viewing party. Vegas Golden Knights viewing party. What does that mean, Adam? Your favorite guy, Chance, is on the scene. Vegas Vivas are out there. Don't be anti-Chance. Exclusive prizes. Best thing about it, aside from having it on the 143-foot screen at Stadium Swim, a VGK viewing party as the Knights are in Phoenix to take on the Coyotes, free entry to Stadium Swim. All you got to do is wear your VGK gear. How cool is that? 7 o'clock puck drop. You're going to be here.
I will.
Are you still are you doing sidebars? What are you doing? Anything for road games anymore for VGK?
I haven't been, but I'm considering going tomorrow.
That'd be a good idea. Really work at it, right?
Yeah.
How's Danny Webster doing so far? Please tell me you're like, awful.
Fantastic.
Danny over from?
Some other paper.
Okay. Oh, we're not allowed to mention the paper.
I don't know.
Is there more legal fight? You guys are always fighting.
No, I'm not.
Is that
fighting.
Because of Ray Brewer?
I'm not fighting.
Does that go back?
It's high level.
Do you go into the bosses? You're like, let's come on.
Careful, guys.
Smash them in court. Careful, guys. You're right. You know what? Damon is a savvy veteran. You're right. Everything is interconnected in the city, and don't pick sides. Just stay neutral. Don't give good sports opinions. Don't attack people. I told Damon yesterday, Damon picked up on my advice. Yesterday, Adam, I was driving in. Some jabroni is driving up the shoulder on one of the streets. I'm behind him eventually. Not that I sped up and tried to catch up to him. But I look on the back of his car. It's wrapped in a business, and his phone number's on there.
Huh.
Like, let's do this.
Call it?
No, because as I told DeMont, I think I told the story off the air yesterday, so now it's on. No, you know what? Vegas is a crazy place where this person could be someone, like, not someone, but could be connected to someone.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I used a name like it's Fred Wynn, you know? Mm. It's like Steve's long-lost cousin.
You never know.
And then all of a sudden, the hammer comes down because you went after a Wynn family member. Not saying that's who it was.
Best to leave it alone.
There's no point. They know they're doing wrong.
So you're saying this person's name was Jimmy Bellagio.
Okay. All right. Well, we had a good opportunity earlier today. You love Brad Underwood.
I do.
And we're going to talk about it at the end of the conversation. But more important things to start. He is the new chair. Brad Underwood is the new chair for Coaches Versus Cancer. And we started off the conversation. We this is a great cause. We've all been touched in our family by cancer. And we started off with Brad Underwood saying, hey, the fight goes on. This is still really, really important. Right, Coach?
Well, I think one of the things is it's time to put an end to it, first and foremost. Secondly, anything we can do to get people's attention, to go get screened, to create interest and keep it at the forefront of what everybody's thinking about in terms of their health and so on and so forth. Coaches have a very small piece of this. But we also have a big stage and a big platform, and be able to take advantage of that is something that we don't take lightly. I'll be honest, for me, it's a great distraction from what we do. And to be able to help other people means so much to myself, to my wife, to our family. Our family's been touched by it. And so I don't look at it as a distraction in any way. I look at it as a worthwhile time commitment that we should be able, as coaches, to be able to do other things other than just coach basketball. And, you know, this is just such a great cause. The job Lon Kruger's done to this point is phenomenal. I'm excited to take over for him and keep the you know, keep the train moving forward and until we get something done tier wise.
It is it's big shoes to fill. Like Lon is all about it, and I hope people understand the dedication that he has had, that he has showed. Like, he goes above and beyond, and really, I've you know, personally dealt with him in some regards in this area too. So this guy is all about it. So it's kind of a tough act to follow there.
Oh, I've got huge shoes, impossible shoes to fill. I just want to be able to, you know, just be somewhat close to what he was in terms of his commitment, his time commitment, his dedication. Obviously, his golf event there in Vegas really helped ignite this thing and bring coaches from all over the country together. And the money raised has been substantial. So we've got to find that next wave of coaches. We've got to find that young group of coaches who, you know, want to be about something other than just coaching their guys. And it's such a great cause. The job Lon's done will never be equal.
Coaches.cancer.org. Check it out. Get information. And obviously, we've got all our big events in Las Vegas, including the golf tournament coming up in the third week of May. Brad Underwood, the chair, is with us, head coach at Illinois. All right. Well, let's put the scout hat on here because you know, you faced all these guys. Not all of them, but you can tell us more about some of the teams in the Final Four. First of all, what was it like facing UConn? And I saw you kind of double and triple down. I think it was one of the sideline interviews where you're like, "Hey, we're gonna keep attacking, man. We're gonna keep attacking." So, give us your read on what UConn is.
Really, yeah. Really, really good. And I think they're one of the best teams that I've seen in my time as a head coach. I think that you underappreciate how big they are, how athletic they are. They have two lockdown defenders on the perimeter in Castle and Newton. And then what Donovan does in the middle is just scary. I've compared him to Rudy Gobert. I don't know if that's a great comparison. He's so long and athletic. We were 0-for-19. I regret making that statement on air. We should keep attacking him. We should have stopped after about five. But the one thing they don't have to do is they don't have to get in rotation. They're very good at staying out of rotation because their on-ball defenders are very good. And then Diarra comes in off the bench, elite quickness and speed and tenacity on the defensive side. And Cam Spencer's very, very smart, high IQ, and has great size. So their size was a problem for us because we're very big and we had a size advantage on almost everybody we played all year, and we didn't have that against them.
One of the things that I've heard for many years, and it seems like a cliche for the most part, is a team that can just flip the switch. And I don't think a switch actually exists, but sometimes when I watch, you kind of feel like it does. Like, did it feel like they just flipped a switch at some point in that game and then you just couldn't turn it around?
I think they wear you down. Yeah. I think they have a great capacity. We're right there. We're 23 all. We're down a couple. It's a two possession game and a half, and we missed a couple shots. The thing you have to do with UConn is you have to score with them. And we had the number one offense in the country going into the game, and it's so stressful if you miss a couple of shots. We guarded, but it's right there, and they make it so hard every trip to score, and you know, eventually they're going to get some easy baskets to transition. They go with their speed group off the bench that just comes in and is super fast in transition. So they put a ton of pressure on you defensively, but offensively they're easy baskets in transition and are what break your back.
Well, I'll tell you, we're glad that you're even more heavily involved with Coaches versus Cancer. I think it's going to be good for the organization. I'll also say excelling at a high level pleases us because my partner Adam told me, you know, years ago, he's like, man, this Coach Brad. What was it? What was the your recollection when he was at Stephen F. Austin? I forget what gym in Vegas you were. Were you chatting him up somewhere?
Oh, it was, yeah,
like, so down to earth
at the Orleans, yeah. And just, you know, obviously watching from afar, I thought you were such a great coach with what you were doing at Austin. But then meeting you and kind of writing a story about your guys' success there, just you were like above and beyond, just accessible and very cool. So I appreciated that, and I thought big things, and I wasn't alone. But yeah, the entire world knows now. So. Appreciate everything on the court and off the court, Coach, and please keep it up.
Well, I'm excited to be able to do both, and I appreciate the kind words and you know it's looking forward to being out in Vegas at Lon's event, seeing you guys, and it's such a great cause and the 30-year anniversary this year of Coaches versus Cancer, and you know, we keep raising hundreds of millions of dollars and. It's all for you know, helping our friends, helping our family, put a stop to cancer.
Thanks, Coach. We'll see you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Good spot here with Robbie Hummel, the former Purdue player and analyst for everyone. Right, I find you everywhere. He's on Cofield and Company here on ESPN Las Vegas. I always think it's weird when you bring on a former player and you're like, congrats, about the Final Four. What does that feel like?
Like I played and right. I did this?
Yeah. It's still cool, though.
No, it is. And you know, I played for Coach Painter. He recruited me. So did Paul Lusk, who's an assistant on their staff. Elliot Bloom's their director of basketball operations. He was there for my entire time at Purdue as well. So. You know, it's great to see the program finally get over the hump. We've been so close so many times. You know, for myself, I feel like I played on a team that was on the way to maybe being able to make a run like that. We were going to be a one seed. I blew my knee out at Minnesota. And, you know, you go through that, and then you re-tear your ACL 7 months later, and you go from being on a team that, hey, we're capable of making a run like that to when I come back and play, it's a very different group of personnel. And it – you know, whether it's Glenn Robinson getting hurt before the Duke game, or it's, you know, the guys Troy Lewis, Todd Mitchell, Everett Stevens, those guys coming up a little bit short in the Elite Eight against Kansas State. There's so many things where you're like, man, we're so close to getting over the hump and just couldn't do it. And now you see this group that has been so driven by the upset to Fairleigh Dickinson last year, and it's just really cool to see.
How much pride, I mean, you mentioned all those teams over the years. How much pride do you take in being part of just building? I mean, it's been great for a long time, but as part of the build-up, your era was part
of
this.
Yeah, you know, I'm, I guess, a part of Coach Painter's third recruiting class because he came in and was the associate head coach under Coach Katy for a year. He got to recruit. He brought that first group in. The second recruiting class he had was Keaton Grant and Chris Kramer, and those guys played a big part of those teams. And then you get Jawan Johnson, who's a first-round pick. Etwan Moore is a 10-year NBA guy. And myself, I played in the NBA for 2 years. We had a great core, you know, and you play with a group like that. And then you keep guys, which we don't really see as much anymore. Yeah. Those same five guys were a big part of Purdue's team for four consecutive years. So it's probably kind of a lost art, although Purdue's team this year does have a lot of holdover from years past. But it was a special group to be a part of, and it's pretty cool when you're a part of a family, per se. And every team says it's a family atmosphere, but because of the fact that you've got Gene Katy from 1981 or 82 on into Matt Painter, who played for Coach Katy, we've had two coaches for 40 years. And other than Michigan State, there's not many programs that can say that.
Seeing Gene Katy at the game was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, just unbelievable, the atmosphere, the excitement. You know, Tubby Smith, who I worked for for many years, was his best man at his wedding.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We always hear great stories about Gene Katy, and it was exciting to see them give a piece of the net to
totally.
Him, because it's a program, and there's not a lot of schools like you guys at Purdue where, you know, there is two coaches, and what Matt's been able to do there, and kind of people felt like, well, I don't know if they're going to do it this year, and now they're rolling along, and what do you think about their chances here now? They got to play the Cinderella story and, you know, NC State, and what do you think, how do you think it's going to go for them?
Yeah, I like the matchup for Purdue. You know, certainly NC State is a team that's been rolling. To win 9 straight elimination games is really impressive. But when you're talking about matching up with Edie, you need depth. And that's something that NC State just doesn't have a ton of. You've got, obviously DJ Burns, you've got Diarra, you've got Middlebrooks who comes off the bench, but outside of those three guys, if those dudes get in foul trouble, they just don't have, even if it's walk-ons, just somebody to throw out there that's 6'10", 6'11". I think their next biggest guy is 6'9", 200 pounds. If they're in foul trouble, it's going to be a world of hurt. Now, they've got to guard Burns on the other side. They've got to kind of, you know, look at some of these guards that have come on for NC State and played really good basketball here. DJ Horn has been, he's a little bit streaky, but he can, when he gets going, he can really go. So I like the matchup for Purdue, but certainly the Edie-Burns matchup is going to be one that's talked about a lot.
Well, that, to me, that's a very casual fan thing. Like, we are so into Burns, Edie. Like, it's so exciting. For somebody who's been around the game for so long, been into, like, is it fun for you guys too, or are you more like, hey, there's a really good point guard matchup here,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, no,
like, strategy.
I think Michael O'Connell is a big reason why this NC State season has turned. But the funny thing will be, I could totally see Purdue putting Edie on Diarra and having Trey Kaufman-Wren start on Burns, and then they'll just double with Edie.
Yeah.
They did it to Tyler Wall. They've done it to a couple other people too this year. That would not shock me. Just because Diarra is not really a shooter. Now you gotta block out Diarra because he's going to the offensive glass. But yeah, it's a fun matchup. But there's other fun matchups as well. Lance Jones and DJ Horn, yeah, that's a good one. NC State's playing great. You look at their numbers the last nine games. They're a different team than what we saw for the first 30.
Yeah, and it is interesting. Like, the overall numbers would tell you they are not a good defensive team.
No.
But they have been.
That's right.
Like, is it possible to totally change your profile and your dynamic?
Some of it has to be luck. Because you have to think, you can change a little bit, but maybe some shots just haven't gone down that were going in for the first 30. The fact that they've played 40 games.
Yeah.
They're 26-14, and we still have, you know, at least one more, maybe two more for them to go.
It's one.
It was. Yeah.
It's one. Come on.
It was. I'm not taking this jinx right here. It is interesting, though, to see just some of their numbers from an offensive standpoint, from a defensive standpoint. But you listen to some of the things that their players have said, the recommitment to, whether it's DJ Burns being in shape, to doing the little things, to being a winning team. You know, and that's something that goes a long way. Kevin Keats deserves so much credit because he kept this thing on the tracks. And you win that many elimination games in a row, man, that's a heck of a job that he's done.
Let me get your take. We're talking to Robbie Hummel, last 90 seconds here. Let me get your take on an angle that's local to Vegas, UNLV, the Mountain West Conference. They got a lot of teams in.
Sure.
But outside of San Diego State, no one's really winning games. And I've always thought modeling your teams after San Diego State to get through the conference is actually hurting the Mountain West.
Sure.
But I don't know how they get out of the cycle, because I think once they get to the tournament, yeah, they play physical, but they're not as big as other teams, and then they don't have enough pure scores.
Yeah. Well, I think we hear that narrative in the Big Ten, too, about how, well, the style of play is hurting the league or whatever it is, and that's what's held it back. I thought the league probably – you know, you look at where these teams were seated. They weren't put in places to be successful, right? And I think the Mountain West is at a disadvantage because everyone knows how good these teams are. So who really wants to go play at a UNLV? Who wants to go play at Utah State? Like, those teams can beat you. And if your net ranking isn't what, you know, is appealing to a lot of these power conference teams, you're not going to get to play them. So I don't know what the fix is, because the Mountain West had a tremendous year. But they've got to find a way to play the net ranking to get to where they're not the 8 seed, the 9 seed, the seeds where you're just statistically not going to advance. That's the biggest problem.
We were talking to the Grambling State coach earlier, and the SWAC has to play every game on the road.
Yeah, he played two games before January 1st at home. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Mountain West schools have to.
Give a two-month road trip.
It's crazy. Robbie, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No problem, guys.
There he is, former Purdue player, excellent analyst on radio and TV, Robbie Hummel. As we wrap things up here on a Thursday from Radio Row in Phoenix, there's so many good stories we didn't get to, but I almost feel like we're wasting it in 90 seconds. This Ohtani story, another one? This is weird.
It's not really Ohtani, though. It's more the Dodgers. The story.
Are we sure? Who do we know who was in the room? Was it Dodger personnel, or was it like,
sounds like it was Dodger
extended
personnel.
Yakuza? What's going on? Because that's the method it sounded like.
Yeah.
Or it sounded like.
The woman who caught his first home run ball was apparently separated from her husband. According to her, again, we don't know what the actual details are, essentially detained until she gave up the ball.
Yeah, but how about the methods? Damon, had you seen this? They got her in a room, and did they push the husband out of the room?
Wouldn't let her talk to him or get advice from him.
They put her head in a vice to get the baseball?
Whether she should take the offer or not, and then give her a very low-ball offer of two hats, a signed bat, and a signed ball. The ball, according to an auction house, is worth at least $100,000. She is upset now that she was not allowed to negotiate further and was basically just demanded to hand it over.
I blame the husband. Why didn't you take the baseball and say it was me?
Well, I think it happened very quickly. Usually that's the case, where they grab the person who has the ball and takes them back.
Bad husband, that's all I'm saying.
Thanks to Salerno for manning the set over at Circa Las Vegas. Thanks to everyone here, including Charlie Barker, booking all the great guests for us. We're back tomorrow, bigger and better than ever, with even more guests, a lot of our good friends from around college basketball. Be with us on Friday.